giant of limitless power at man's command. And where was it science found that giant? In the atom, a particle so infinitely small that it takes over 100 billion atoms to make up the head of a pin.
This is Out of the Basement, a podcast dedicated to radiation medicine.
This is Dr. Jason Bechter coming at you out of the totality of the Eclipse Vermont Mountain Basements with the incredibly exciting coding and billing episode from the Extrol sponsored miniseries on low-dose radiotherapy for osteoarthritis and other things. I wanted to do a Zoolander play on words of Center for Kids Who Can't Read Good, but I haven't come up with a clever way to do that yet. As always, I am not specifically discussing coding and billing for orthovoltage devices because here in America, if you are currently using an orthovoltage device to treat things like osteoarthritis, you certainly don't need me to tell you how to do any of it. And again, you probably know more than me. But for those of you who aren't doing that, you should check out Extrol's website and my favorite, their YouTube channel, to remind yourself that yes, orthovoltage is it orthovoltages or orthovoltage-jai? Yeah. Anyway, they're very easy to use. They work great for arthritis. They're used in America right now and reimbursed by insurance. Go to their website, go to YouTube, tell me what the plural of orthovoltage is. And for some of you, remind yourself that those curves for 200 GBP really does work for bones and joints, and then get back to me. This is actually going to be a brief episode. I don't know why I tricked myself like that, but the reason being that the number one most important thing to remember for coding and billing in medicine in general, radiation in particular, is that geography matters. And we don't really hear about this a lot. Number one, because nobody teaches us about coding and billing, and these skills are rapidly being lost. And you guys have heard me rant about this just an infinite number of times, but with the trend of most doctors being W-2 employees, the knowledge of how to code and bill is really gone by the wayside. And more so since all radiation oncology residency programs are at institutions and hospitals large enough to support something as niche as a radiation oncology residency, they're all academic medical centers. And oftentimes, the faculty at academic medical centers started their jobs out of their academic medical residency. And oftentimes, they are faculty at the institution where they did their residency program, or they've only changed once or twice. But the point being, they have never had to do this themselves. So residents are really not exposed to this, not through any sort of maliciousness or intention or anything other than you can't teach what you don't know, and you don't know what you don't know, and it has a quick compounding effect. What I realized after training and working in multiple different states and multiple different hospitals and having friends all over the country, and I don't mean that in a look how cool I am. I mean that as in all I do is radiation oncology 24/7. I only have friends in radiation oncology, but in my personal experience in talking with folks, geography matters so deeply in billing, much more than anyone even realizes, because we talk about this erroneously as in just academic versus community or freestanding versus hospital outpatient, and all those things matter for sure. But as I have worked in academic settings in different states and private settings in different states, and I have come to learn that I can do the exact same thing in the exact same type of setting just in different areas of the country, and the insurance approval or denial, and certainly how much it costs, are wildly different. And that's why it drives me up a wall when I see all these financial toxicity papers and this trend of worrying about economics and radiation oncology, because it's all voodoo. And specifically, not to say that I don't think it matters, I think it matters a tremendous amount. But what we're often seeing in the literature is Medicare rates, which for most practices, traditional Medicare patients make up maybe 1/3 of their patient population. So these days, it's usually a little less than a third Medicare, a little less than a third Medicare Advantage, a little less than a third private, and then the 5 to 10% of everything else of either private pay or no insurance or so on and so forth. And it's very disingenuous to use Medicare rates to estimate or make a generalized estimate of costs for things across the country. And this is true. This is not limited to radiation. This is true in general, but especially if we start to get the PPS exempt centers involved. But getting off my soapbox here, I've done the best I can. I'm going to give you guys some general information about the financial impact of LDRT for OA. And again, I'm sticking with osteoarthritis. You can generalize these things to Dupuytren's or keloids or whatnot. So I apologize if I just stick with saying OA, and I don't mean just osteoarthritis, but I'm going to be intentionally fuzzy a little bit on specifically. I'm not going to sit here and say you should bill it as XYZ and use this ICD code and blah, 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 because what works for me might not work for you. And more importantly, I have a lot of control over my billing where I've learned that many people don't. And the number one thing is to play nice with your coders and billers. If you're at a place like, let's go with Cleveland Clinic, for example, Cleveland Clinic is a machine. If you are an attending physician at Cleveland Clinic, if you think that you're going to get the clinic's coding and billers to change what they're going to do because you want them to, I have never worked at Cleveland Clinic. I love Cleveland Clinic out of all the big places, but you're not going to change that machine. You can try, just let me know how it goes. But so it wouldn't be really fair for me to be very prescriptive in terms of how to code and bill this because it might not apply to you. So we're going to stick with sort of generalities, but off the top, I will say that I have personally never had a denial for LDRT for osteoarthritis. And that is in both New York and Vermont. And that is across, I've never tracked all the insurance plans and whatnot, but I honestly couldn't even tell you how many patients I've treated with this because I never thought to track that. But I have never had a denial. Now, again, I am very careful and fastidious with how I do this. And that's where I find most people get into trouble with all these stories about weird denials and whatnot. Obviously, we all will get the occasional crazy denial that doesn't make any sense. But I can say that I have never gotten a denial. And the majority of people I know actively doing this, both Linac and Orthovoltage, but the majority of people get this approved without much issue the majority of the time. The few exceptions to that are notable. And I heard one relatively recently that was very geography related. It was very weird. I still don't quite understand what was going on with that plan. It's usually, as always, for all of us, Medicare Advantage. Let's be real about that. It's killing this country. But so your mileage may vary. Now, the most important thing too, I'd love to build a database of appeals letters and things. And I've got that started. There's a lot of very patient specific or practice specific information. So I don't want to release that into the wild until it's more generalized. But if you start doing this, when you start doing this, if you encounter denials, let me know. And I can try to, if I've heard of it before, I'll tell you specifically what levers to pull to try to get it reimbursed. But at the very least, we can start to understand what the payers are going to fight about. Because I think as this picks up steam, and I've seen this just over the past couple of years, the number of practices that are doing this really started to drastically increase. And I assume that one day in the not too distant future, there will be some sort of critical mass where the insurance companies might start bucking and we have to go to war about it. I might be wrong, and I'll talk about why I might be wrong on that. But the more information we have before that happens, the better. Now, I do want to start with the justification for the financial burden of all this, because there is a giant misconception that radiotherapy is very expensive and costs both patient and system a lot of money. And that's simply not true. At least in the cancer space, we all know now that all of radiation oncology for an entire year costs CMS less than just the top three oncology drugs alone. And pound for pound, dollar for dollar, radiation therapy, whether for malignant or benign diseases, is one of the most cost-effective and value-driven interventions in all of medicine. And while people might not realize this, that is incredibly true for osteoarthritis and low-dose radiotherapy. It's hard to really pin down averages because it depends on who's doing the billing and whatnot. But best I can figure, again, using the dreaded Medicare dollars just for comparison purposes, I would estimate that an average course of LDRT costs $1,500 to $2,500, again, using Medicare data. And that is significantly lower than the per person medical costs attributed to osteoarthritis. And I've spent a lot of time looking in the literature for this, and because obviously arthritis is so prevalent in this country, but probably the most recent slash best data I've seen is that the average per person cost of osteoarthritis not treated by LDRT is about $11,000 per year between 2008 and 2014. And that paper where that came from, those authors also noted that it was exclusive of lost work days, which amounted to 180.9 million days from 2013 to 2015. When you think about, and these are all Medicare dollars and stuff, so when we're talking about an average cost of LDRT is $1,500 to $2,500, when the average per person cost is $11,000, and then that's not including the disability from time off work, you got 180.9 million days missed because of symptoms from 2013 to 2015. That's pretty crazy. The number one argument that I would make in favor of LDRT is that if you can significantly reduce someone's pain for really any amount of time, but let's say, again, 80% of people get moderate to significant relief that lasts 6 to 12 months, just my normal experience and weight from the literature. That's time that they're not having to miss work or take medications or get injections, and it delays the time to any sort of joint replacement surgery. The average total cost of non-operative procedures per patient in the year leading up to a total knee arthroplasty was $1,300. It's $1,355. That is not including the actual procedure. This was weird that you figured you could just pop this into Google and it'd come right up, but it did actually take like normal literature searching, which was irritating to find. But so in 2007, Medicare paid for approximately 250,000 total and partial hip replacement surgeries, as well as 340,000 knee arthroplasties. The inpatient cost for a hip replacement is estimated to be at least $30,000 to $38,000. And according to data from Blue Cross Blue Shield, costs for the surgery itself can range from $17,000 to $74,000. It's hard for us. This is so far outside our normal oncology world that we underestimate both the prevalence and the expense of just arthritis, because we've been beaten over the head over the last decade about how expensive radiation is and so on and so forth, and all that tired song and dance, that I think we've really lost sight of what the actual costs of other things are and how prevalent they are and how cost effective we really are. Going back to just the knee and hip thing, that was 2007. That was 15 something years ago, right? And even back then, there is an estimate, just Medicare, this isn't private payers, 250,000 total and partial hip replacements, 340,000 knee arthroplasties. So you can, if the payer mixes could be applied there, like a third of people are on Medicare, maybe multiply those numbers by three. I don't know. I tried to find it. Maybe it exists out there, but that's just knee and hip. There are other joints that can be replaced, but, and there's a New York Times article where I think it was $130,000 for a knee replacement was the number one of the patients had said. If you can do a treatment, LDRT, with basically minimal side effects, 80% efficacy, 6 to 12 months of duration, average costs of $1,500 to $2,500 per Medicare dollars, and save people that amount of time off work, that amount of cost, or at least delay it, if assuming they're going to have to get the surgery anyway, that's incredibly valuable. And it is a number one argument I would make now and make moving forward about why LDRT is a benefit to really the healthcare system as a whole. Well, these numbers are crazy. And the population is only getting older, which we all know. So as the years go on here, as the boomers continue to age, and especially in America where people aren't the healthiest, the number of arthritis cases, joints affected by arthritis, it's just going to go up. Just like cancer is going up, arthritis is going to go up, but more, because arthritis isn't going to kill people like cancer has the risk to. This is just going to be a growing number, a growing cost, and either expensive like surgery or limited efficacy treatments like NSAIDs or whatnot. All right, so you've got your first patient and you get the SIM done, you get the target volumes done. I did forget to mention that I put it in the description, but I don't think I said it in the last episode, but 3 gray in 6 fractions done every other day. And I prefer APPA or some sort of beam arrangement like that, and then leave it up to dosimetry for beam energy and whatnot. But so number one, ICD codes. So ICD codes, I just use the regular M codes for arthritis, so we're used to the C codes for the most part, except for the DCIS. But so in the ICD-10 codes, so M13 is other arthritis, M19.90 is unspecified arthritis, things like that. You're going to want to use the M codes. And so if your billers ask, if when you start doing this and your department comes to you and says, what is this? So Evacor, our best friends over at Evacor, I haven't looked to see if there's an even newer one, but back in as late as 2019, I believe, the Evacor manual specifically approved osteoarthritis. And then after 2019, they changed it to degenerative skeletal disorders. So I have the 2022 Evacor guidelines in front of me. Those who don't know, Evacor is a common benefit manager that when you have to do peer-to-peers, these are the people you talk to. But so in the 2022 edition, I think this is the October version of the 2022 manual, it is under benign and other conditions. So degenerative skeletal disorders, radiation therapy may be used for symptomatic degenerative skeletal and joint disorders, i.e. plantar fasciitis, trochanteric bursitis, that are refractory to conventional methods. For plantar fasciitis, for example, 1 gray per week for 6 weeks was associated with a response rate approaching 80% and durable at 48 weeks. Using conventional isodose technique, up to 8 fractions is considered appropriate. They no longer specifically say osteoarthritis, but osteoarthritis is a degenerative skeletal disorder. So they also said the key thing. So the key thing, going back to what I said in the prior episode, I am not the one working up and diagnosing the osteoarthritis, and I always make sure that the patients have tried and failed at least one prior therapy, and I document it as such. And that's really the key to documenting, is that you can say things like when they were diagnosed or how long it has gone on for, but noting that they are still symptomatic and have tried prior therapies, and specifically mentioning those therapies are usually key. And I personally believe that the 3 gray and 6 fractions is the best way to go, but they do approve up to 8 fractions. And they also say the other key part, which is conventional isodose techniques. The shorthand, if your mind goes blank, if you are sitting in clinic and you listen to this episode way in the past and your first patient's finally in front of you and it's a year from now and you forget everything I've ever said, just think of arthritis like bone mets. And what do I mean by that? For those of us who have been in practice for any length of time, we know that if you try to bill 3D IGRT to a patient with Evacor managed insurance for bone mets, that's not going to work. You are going to get denied every single time. So remember, osteoarthritis, bill it like bone mets. Becta says bill it like bone mets. That's close enough. Anyway, what I mean by that is do not bill IGRT. It is going to get denied every single time. That's if you're, the other stuff is squishy. I don't know. I bet there are people out there who are probably sneaking it through on certain plans, but I have never billed IGRT. And that is basically a slam dunk way that you're going to get a denial. And because if you think about it, in our modern world here, if you are doing 3 gray in 6 fractions to a knee, what is going to be your justification for daily IGRT? It's going to be a hard sell. Now, I personally believe that we should be doing IGRT on every patient, every treatment, every time, but that's neither here nor there. Don't do IGRT. Then it really comes down to 3D versus complex isodose. So I've gotten into this with Evacor before. So 3D is, there's a lot of misconceptions about this, and we'll be for another time, but 3D is defined very specifically by Evacor. And so one, there is no, 2D isn't really a thing. So the technical name is complex isodose. For complex isodose, that requires the use of a conventional simulator using the strictest definitions. None of us have a conventional simulator anymore. So technically, we can't really do complex isodose, but whatever. So it's complex isodose or 2D. How does Evercore define that? And I got into this argument on a peer-to-peer with them a couple of years back. And if you go through their manual, a 3D plan versus a 2D plan, the main criteria is the generation and evaluation of a dose volume histogram, a DVH. Now, the problem with that is all modern treatment planning software natively, by default, will always generate a DVH. You're in a bind there where you have done, through no choice or fault of your own, you have generated a DVH. If you looked at it, technically you evaluated it. That is technically 3D. Evercore will not budge on this. And the hands down most conservative way to bill osteoarthritis is through complex isodose, aka 2D, aka conventional isodose, no IGRT. And that being said, an argument could be made, as I just made it myself, that 3D would be appropriate. Now, I would say it's better to be conservative and just not have to deal with it, but this is where you're going to have to get into kind of specifics with your billers, because with complex isodose, this comes with very specific codes that are bundled. And in particular, the daily treatment delivery is the 77407 if you're in the hospital outpatient. If you're one of the 7% in the freestanding, per the most recent Astro Town Hall, there are some G codes and it's based on MEV. But the other thing to note with these complex isodose plans is billing 77307 for teletherapy, isodose plans, complex. And this is the part where I'm going to leave it alone, meaning that if you know what I'm talking about already in terms of how to code and bill and you know what 77307 is off the top of your head, you don't need me. And if you don't, and you're in independent practice, that means it's because your department already takes care of it for you. What I would recommend is you use the M code for the diagnosis, conventional isodose or complex isodose, no IGRT, and you let your department do what it would normally do. Now, I say that because there are certain codes that are bundled in general with complex isodose versus 3D, just like with IMRT and all that. And some departments have very strong feelings on this and some don't. Some have, I won't call them tricks, but some have ways of billing things in a certain way and so on and so forth. And it's not worth getting into it with your department. It's the simplest thing is M codes for ICD-10, no IGRT, let your department do whatever it's going to do. And if you do your own billing, you certainly don't need me to tell you how to bill. The one thing I will just put out there is, for the love of God, don't exploit a loophole. If you find a loophole and you abuse the hell out of it, you hurt the rest of us. Okay, that's how they crack down on things. Who I'm talking about, people who are listening to this, be a good citizen. And that's my number one request. Now, if you do find yourself faced with a denial, the ones I've heard of, one is I've seen the claim that this is not approved by the FDA. That one, really interesting if you think about it. So it was specifically that LDRT for osteoarthritis is not FDA approved. So the FDA is not a doctor. The FDA doesn't, it's not the NCCN guidelines. And what they mean there, what they think they mean there, this insurance company or whoever is using this, is that you're doing off-label treatments. But a linear accelerator, which again is what this episode is targeted at, if you look at the 510K approval for what they can market and stuff, they, as far as I know, all common linear accelerators, which is just basically Varian mostly and Elekta somewhat, have benign indications on their 510K approvals for all of their devices that I'm aware of. Not that I might have actually read all of the 510Ks. Wow. I'm just realizing that as I say that. I don't know. But they all have some level of benign. Because if you think about it, if that were true, we couldn't do heterotopic ossification, which I think every department does. You couldn't do keloids, which is pretty common. You couldn't do Dupuytren's, which is common. You couldn't do SRS for trigeminal neuralgia, assuming you're Linac base or whatever. You couldn't do AVM, arterial venous malformation. We do lots of benign things anyway. That's the crazy thing, is where there's like some mental block with this. We all have done benign treatments anyway. this is just another one. That's if you get that denial, or and that's one of the things the insurance company says, it's wrong. And I would just find the 510K or for whatever machine you're using and point that out. Number two, they will bring up that this is new or investigational. It's chiefly the investigational, which when I've seen that, it's cited as actually in the Red Journal Arthritis Review article that with Austin Dove is the first author that I'm co-author on. That article gets brought up. As anyone who has ever written a paper knows, you don't, good scientists, good doctors don't speak definitively, meaning that when papers are written, we say more research is needed. What I mean by that, and what I assume most people mean by that, who are actually thinking about why they're writing it other than their PI told them to, it's always more research is needed. If you think you have figured it out, if you think everything there is to know about disease or disease treatment has been found, get out of medicine. You don't belong in medicine. You're not thinking deeply enough. More research is always needed. And that was why in the upfront, the top episode, talking about 125 years of history. So we have this treatment has been in use for close to 125 years. And there is a mountain of in vitro and in vivo evidence about how it works. It's anti-inflammatory. It's altering the cellular microenvironment, leukocyte adhesion, cytokines, osteoclast, inhibition, osteoblast stimulation. It's just like ibuprofen or prednisone, but a different pathway. And in Evacor, so in Evacor's own guidelines, that's the key thing, is it's in their guidelines. Every payer uses Evacor in one of their plans. So if what can happen, and this gets really sad, so you can have a Medicare Advantage plan from one of the private payers that doesn't use Evacor, but we all know that a different payer plan or a different plan from that same payer probably does, or at least in a different state. And I would bring that up on these peer-to-peers. And that's the other thing too, is especially with Medicare Advantage, you can go all the way. There's five layers of appeals. Just keep pushing. If you have to go to a peer-to-peer, go to the peer-to-peer. If you lose, appeal again. It'll go to Maximus, current IRE, the third level. Maximus pretty much always overturns it unless the plan decides that they're going to be psychopathic and appeal. That's the whole, that's not going to be you. The practice that happens to, they know who they are. It's not going to be you. But if that happens, you appeal again. And then you go to an ALJ hearing with a judge and you just keep fighting. Don't ever stop. But that's very rare. And I'm more talking in generalities here. But if anyone wants to cite that it's investigational or experimental, and you say why, and they say what it says right here in this Red Journal Review article that more research is needed. More research is always needed, and you should run away from any doctor or scientist that tells you that we're done on anything. Finally, and perhaps most importantly, because it affects everything else we do, on April 5th, 2023, so a little bit more than a year ago when this episode is coming out, Medicare Advantage final rules were released by CMS. So it's the 2024 Medicare Advantage and Part D final rules, CMS-4201-F. And within that final rule, it was clarified that Medicare Advantage plans must cover any service that traditional Medicare would cover. So medically necessary services. Because chiefly, as we all know, again, Medicare Advantage is usually where we encounter most of our roadblocks. So if you are up against the wall with a denial on Medicare Advantage, remind them of this rule. And so then it gets a little tricky because there is no national coverage determination, NCD, or local coverage determination, LCD, about osteoarthritis. And it becomes a circular argument. But it helps because Medicare will always pay traditional Medicare. So the easiest would be if perhaps you start doing this and your first patient is a traditional Medicare patient. And then if you ever face this down the road, you can make the argument of, look, I have personally treated a Medicare patient and it was reimbursed as medically necessary. And per this final rule, you must cover this. And again, these are all theoretical arguments that either I have seen indirectly or I am envisioning might happen because billing the way I do it with M codes for ICD, complex acidosis, I have not had any issues. But remember to document that it is refractory osteoarthritis. Don't exploit loopholes. Be a good citizen. Remember, this is actually a net win-win for everyone. Win-win-win, arguably, where it's a heck of a lot cheaper than alternatives like surgery. It is, and believe me or not, or believe the evidence or not, it is quite effective. Minimal side effects. And if your on-beam numbers are lagging, heck, here's another on-beam number for you. But there's no downside to this. And I have said this elsewhere, I'll keep saying it. If you haven't done this, you have no idea how gratifying it is to see somebody in follow-up 3 months later and their pain is significantly better. The genuine joy expressed, it is hard to describe. And it sounds like I am selling snake oil, and I don't know how else to talk about this, and I apologize, but I've had people come in and when I did the consult, they were walking with a cane and they've been walking with a cane for 5 years. And then I zap their knees and they come in 3 months later and there's no cane. Or they tell me they can sleep at night. Or they tell me it's the only thing that's worked in a decade. And it's crazy. And again, if it's placebo, if all that clinical evidence is wrong and the lab evidence is wrong and 125 years of experience is wrong, and if all of this is placebo and made up, it is still worth it in a way, if you think about it, because at the end of the day, these people are coming in and telling me how much better they feel. I, you know, think that it works the way the science says it works, but it is quite incredible. And it really is, if this is adopted widespread in America like it is elsewhere, I think it really has a tremendous potential to save the healthcare system a heck of a lot of money, because $2,500 is a lot less than $130,000 knee replacement surgery. And the side effect profile is different. But so we'll wrap it up there. And over the years to come, I'll try to build up a database for us for if and when some insurance plan or benefit manager decides to get persnickety and we have to go to war over this, but maybe not. Maybe they will do the maths for themselves and say, oh, wow, this is a heck of a lot cheaper. We save a lot of money by paying for radiotherapy, LDRT, instead of a knee replacement. But have we ever known any insurance plan to be reasonable or logical? No, I don't think so. There's always next year.
This has been a Photon Media production. Don't forget to like and subscribe on whatever platform you use to listen to us. Be well and be mocked.